My name is Frank, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, that suddenly dawned on me, there's three things that I apparently didn't bring that I should have brought here. I didn't bring my band, and I don't have my poem or my story. Every time I try to read a poem or a story, I'd miss a page somewhere. I guess that's because I'm an alcoholic. Earlier on, Don and I were going to switch roles here. We're going to do something different, and I was going to introduce him, and he was going to speak. He told two jokes, and you didn't respond, and he changed the rules. I'm a member of the Lamont Oaks group in Illinois, the best home group in the world. And I hope you feel that way about your group, because I surely do about mine. And I've been sober since November 3rd, 1971. And I'm an alcoholic. You know, it's kind of surprising. Every time I get a chance to talk a lot around the country, and every time I say that, it surprises me that I can say that my name is Frank Milos and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I've been sober since 1971 because I didn't come here to stay here. I just kind of came to look. So you see, I knew I wasn't really an alcoholic. I was just kind of an alcoholic. But I'm glad to be here in the state of Wisconsin, and this seems to be my year for Wisconsin. Because already this year I've been in Waukesha and Green Lake, and here tonight, and next week in Madison. And Wisconsin is a special place for me because there are people in Los Angeles that think that Eau Claire, Wisconsin is the birthplace of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm glad that I got sober before I met him and found out that Akron played a little part in it. You know, it's kind of funny being here. I expect that he'll come out through the door any minute and want time for rebuttal. But he's a very good friend of mine. And I'm proud to know him and many other members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know. I'm going to tell you something. We've heard in Illinois that the people in this group like long talks. And if that's the criteria, you're only going to like me half as much as you liked last year's speaker. Where I come from, we don't give drunkologues. Not that we don't think that they play a part in Alcoholics Anonymous, and not that they're not good, but I sometimes question long drunkologues. I think sometimes for people like me, they have an adverse reaction. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I came here to compare my way out of here. And when I heard long drunkologues about jails and prisons and divorces and car wrecks and police stations and hospitals, I knew I wasn't in the right place. And I think a lot of newcomers come here and they, if not consciously, subconsciously, try to find a justification to leave. I'm really not that bad. And until those things happen to me, I gotta keep trying to do this thing by myself. You see, none of those things had ever happened to me. I never had any car wrecks, never been arrested for drunk driving, never got a divorce, didn't end up in a hospital, go to jail. But I suffer from alcoholism. I suffer from a disease that involves emotions and feelings as well as alcohol. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I came here with three questions. I wanted to first know, what is an alcoholic? I wanted your definition. Early on, when I came and asked that question, I was told by wise members of Alcoholics Anonymous We don't have a definition for alcoholism. The book Alcoholics Anonymous says we are people who have lost their ability to drink. But that's all. The book Alcoholics Anonymous, I was told, has stories and comparison. So I thought to myself, well, you don't have a definition. I really wanted a definition because I was certain that your definition would not apply to me. You see, I was too young to be an alcoholic. I was too cute to be an alcoholic. I was too educated to be an alcoholic. I was too successful to be an alcoholic. Alcoholics are losers. They're people who've lost everything. I had everything. Alcoholics aren't derelicts. I lived in a nice house. Alcoholics aren't educated people. I had all these conceptions. So when I came here, I wanted your definition. I would apply that definition to me, and I would certainly know that I didn't belong here. You told me you didn't have a definition. Since then, I've learned a definition. And for the people from St. Paul, Bob B. from St. Paul has the best definition of alcoholic I've ever heard. And I'm going to use his story. I always give him credit. I think this is the last time I'll give him credit for it. It's such a beautiful story. I'd like you to think it's mine. Truth of the matter is he stole it from somebody and he doesn't give him credit. To know what an alcoholic is, he says, use this word picture. There's a big room like this, and in that room are two chairs. One chair sits a non-alcoholic, and in the other chair sits an alcoholic. And on either side of that room is a door. Out that door is happiness forever. And outside that door is a fellow with a baseball bat who's going to beat you over the head. The non-alcoholic gets up, and he walks through that door, and the fellow with the baseball bat beats him over the head. He comes back and sits down. 5 minutes later, he gets up and he walks out that door, never to return. The alcoholic gets up and he walks out that door, and the fellow beats him over the head with a bat. Comes back and sits down. 5 minutes later, he gets up and he walks out that door. The fellow beats him over the head with a bat, and he comes back and sits down. 5 minutes later, he gets up and goes through that door. The fellow with the baseball bat beats him up. He comes back and sits down. 5 minutes later, he gets up and walks out that door, and the fellow with the baseball bat is gone, and he goes looking for him. When you told me you didn't have a definition of alcoholic, that was one strike against you. Second question I had, if I am one, how did I get to be one? I was told early on, Alcoholics Anonymous, we're not about how you got to be one. We don't have time to waste trying to figure out how this happened to you. We're not about Freudian concepts. We don't practice psychiatry here. I thought to myself, two strikes against you. If I'm an alcoholic, and you won't tell me how I got to be one, surely you'll tell me how to get rid of it so I can get on with my life. Because I've got places to go and people to see. I was told by you that I can't get rid of it. Folks, at that moment I knew I was in the wrong place. Three strikes and you're out. The fellow said to me, it's not about how to get rid of it. It's about how to live with it. And that was the first thing about Alcoholics Anonymous to make any sense to me. It's about how to live with it. I had my first drink of alcohol when I was in high school, I think. I really don't recall. Sometimes I hear from AA podiums that the speaker had a drink of alcohol and went crazy. Ended up in the hospital or in jail. Well, I don't know about you, but I know about me, and I'm only here to talk about me. I drank and had a lot of fun. For a lot of years, I drank, and drink equaled fun. drink in me equaled fun. And I discovered early on that alcohol was a good substance. It did things for me that I never believed possible. It took a shy guy and made him not so shy. I tell you what, I always felt kind of like a coward, but when I had enough drinks, I wasn't afraid of anybody. You know, I do a lot of talking now. Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you couldn't get a word out of me because I was so afraid of what you might think or if you'd like me or not. But if I had a few drinks, I could talk about anything at any time for any length. And I can talk about any subject you wanted to hear about. Didn't matter if I knew anything about it. Drink did magic things for me. And I used it for that purpose, and it served me well for a long time. Things started to change. A little bit about my background. I drank through college, and I remember I was one of those rah-rah fraternity guys. And it was just part of life, and it was just so wonderful. And I drank through law school. And it served me well. If it continued to do that, I wouldn't be here tonight. But it started to change. It seemed to me now in retrospect that alcohol did for my emotions what maturity seemed to do for other people's emotions. I early on have the earliest recollection of God. I'm the product of Roman Catholic school. I went to a Catholic grammar school, Catholic high school, Catholic college, Catholic law school. Majored in philosophy, which is what priests do. But my earliest recollection of God was that God was a punishing, vindictive person. I remember in God. Grammar school, being a little kid about 6 years old, and the nuns, I don't know how many of you remember nuns, they used to dress in black and white. She said to the class, she said, there are two kinds of sin. There's venial sin, and there's mortal sin. It was almost as if she put a scroll out there, and on that list were thousands of things, and they call those venial sin. It seemed to me that everything in the world was on that list. She said, now, if you do those things and you die, you go to a place called purgatory. Because God's got to get even. Now, she said it's not really bad because you only burn 2,000 or 3,000 years. I don't know about you. But when I was six, 2,000 or 3,000 years seemed like a long time. Next class, we got into mortal sin, and that's beauty. That list isn't so big. Showed me the list of mortal sins. I was 6 years old, I looked at that list, I hadn't done any of those things, and I knew I was going to do them all. I mean, they were delicious. Later in life, I discovered once wasn't enough. And she said, if you die having done those things, you're doomed. So at six, I was doomed. And it's kind of a hard way to start life and have a good time, knowing that you're doomed. And that was my impression of God. It was just going to be punishment. It was just going to be retribution, and that I was dirty. And I remember being dirty at six, remaining dirty till 34 years of age, till I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you know, when I drank, I didn't only get drunk. I don't know about you, but I did bizarre things. I could do things when I was drunk that I couldn't do. I did things when I was drunk that I wouldn't do. I wouldn't think about doing. I couldn't even think about it. But I did it over and over and over and over. I was a beer drinker early on in my drinking. And I loved Schlitz. conflicts with my drink. Now, beer drinkers will appreciate this. We're volume drinkers. Now, you know, there are people in Alcoholics, well, in Alcoholics Anonymous, but there are people outside Alcoholics Anonymous that believe that you cannot be an alcoholic if you just drank beer. Some people believe you can't get drunk drinking beer. I can get absolutely shit-faced drinking beer. And when I drink enough beer, I can do things that I can't do. I do weird things. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do. And sometimes afterwards, I say to myself, did I do that? You know, I was about 27 years old, and I was 240 pounds, and I just loved that beer. And the only problem with drinking a lot of beer is you have to go to the washroom a lot. Sometimes you even make it. And that's just a slight inconvenience. But it's inconsistent with being a young, up-and-coming superstar lawyer. You know, they kind of look at your pant leg. When I started to think that maybe beer and me was not the right combination, never dawned on me that beer, that alcohol and me was the wrong combination. I decided to do something about my drinking. I decided to switch to vodka martinis. Smirnoff's vodka martinis. Well, when you're a volume drinker and you're used to drinking a lot of things, you drink a lot of things. So I drank vodka martinis like I drank beer. I tried. Funny thing happened. I did weird things. Bizarre things. I started to do things that were inconsistent with being a young, up-and-coming superstar lawyer. I did things inconsistent with being a husband. I even did things inconsistent with being the father of three young children. I did things that were inconsistent with being a human being. Well, being a smart guy, I realized the problem was not anything but vodka martinis. So I had to experiment some more. This time I thought I'd apply all the education that my father had spent all that money on. My father was a factory worker. And he thought it was important that his son got an education. He wanted me to be a lawyer from the time I was 3 years old. I didn't even know what a lawyer was. With a Lithuanian immigrant background, they thought it was important, so they told me that I'd be a lawyer. So I decided, beer didn't work and vodka didn't work. Now I was going to apply this super intelligence that I had gotten and all this education. I was going to do something no one ever thought about doing. I was going to go now on a search of experimentation to find that substance that would work for me like it had before. So that all I wanted to get rid of in my life was bizarre conduct. I just wanted to be able to go out at night and do things that I had planned to do. I wanted to go out at night and know what time I'd get home or what day I'd get home. That's all I wanted. So I decided I would add to this experiment travel. Now, I like country music, so I went to Nashville, Tennessee to conduct this experiment. Now, this is cute. I decided that if you drink what you don't like, you won't drink enough to become bizarre and weird. I didn't like scotch. So I decided I'd go to Nashville and I would drink scotch. I was in Nashville for 3 days. I remember one song. That experiment failed, as did every other experiment I tried. I couldn't succeed in my experiment. No matter how I tried, to change my drinking pattern, who I drank with, where I drank, how much I drank, it all ended up the same way. It was a progressive kind of a thing. I knew I was in trouble before I knew I was in trouble. How could you be an alcoholic and be 27 years old and have a profession and have acquired some things? You see, because after my father told me that if I wanted to be somebody, I should be a lawyer. And over all my life, I remember hearing, if you want to be somebody, you got to be somebody. You know, the funny thing about that is I got the impression that I was nobody. And I thought maybe he was right, that if you be somebody, you are somebody. So I went ahead to be a lawyer. Funny thing happened, though. When I got to be a lawyer, I didn't feel like somebody. I was also told that if you get the things that successful people get, you'll feel like somebody. You'll be a success. And in that process, I acquired everything that I ever imagined possible to acquire for me. And you know what? I got all those things and I still didn't feel like somebody. But when I drank, I did. When I just drank enough alcohol, I felt like somebody. I felt like the person that I thought you saw, the fellow with that title and all those things. But just when I drank enough. But I couldn't just drink enough. I had lost the ability to control what just enough was. I first called Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 30 years old. I called the number. Because, you see, by that time in my life, had you taken any 10 drinking days out of my life, 7 or 8 of those days would have ended up okay. But 2 or 3 of those mornings would have been, God, did I do that? Why did I do that? Did I go there? Did they see me? Did they hear me? Those were the thoughts that I would wake up with, and it never dawned on me who the hell they were. But all my life, they have been the most important people in my life, and I have been attempting to perform for them. And I'll do it at any cost to me. Did they see me? So by this time, I knew that something was wrong, so I called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I picked a number out of the phone book, and I got a recorded message. And we all know how they sound. And it was a woman. And she said, good morning, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. I felt so damn good about that, I just hung up the phone. And you know the funny thing about it is, when I hung up the phone, I knew I had done something about my drinking. I had called Alcoholics Anonymous. That admission will carry me through this thing. Maybe some more splits. You know, I was really interested. I have a daughter who goes to Marquette in Milwaukee. And visiting her last year, we went to the Schlitz Brewery, the closed brewery, and I stood outside the walls of that brewery, and I looked at that closed brewery, and I recalled reading in a magazine, Time or Newsweek, just a few years ago, where they were talking about the decline of the Schlitz Brewery. And they were interviewing a top echelon executive as to, and he was explaining how the Schlitz Brewery went in decline. And I jumped right out of the page. Quote from him, the Schlitz Brewery, he said, began its decline in 1971. Now, folks, that's power. So I thought maybe a little more Schlitz. By the time I was 32 years old, I called Alcoholics Anonymous for the second time. I got a live woman. She said the same thing. Good morning. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. immediately reflecting on my previous experience, I did what had served me well before. I hung up. And again, I got the same feeling. I had done something about my drinking. It was going to be okay. Geez, I acted harshly. I'm 32 years old. Geez, I got a lot of things. I own apartment buildings and real estate and stocks and bonds. I can't be an alcoholic. I'm just a little weird sometimes. Maybe I ought to try another experiment. And I'll tell you what, I traveled around, I tried a lot of experiments. Now when I woke up in the morning after a series of drinking episodes, it was no longer 6 good days and 3 or 4 days of remorse. Now when I woke up every day was, God, did I do that? God, what's wrong with me? Do they know? Did they see? Did they hear? Who are they going to tell? And by that time, I had to choreograph my drinking. Because when you're trying to pretend you are somebody, and you're trying to look good for them, you got to make sure that you go to places they are not likely to see you. So that you have to move around a lot. You got to hide a little bit. And I tried all those things, and every morning I'd wake up with that same feeling. When I was 34 years old, I called Alcoholics Anonymous for the third and last time. And I will never call Alcoholics Anonymous again. I'm certain of that. Not because I don't believe that I may have to. See, I believe that there's another drunk left in Frank Milos. I just don't believe that there's another recovery. And I want to believe that because I don't want to risk it. I just want to try that again. I think 3 strikes and I'm out. You know what happened that morning when I called Alcoholics Anonymous? I got another woman. She said exactly the same thing the other two had said. Good morning. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. Can I help you? Now, nothing in particular happened the night before that was any different than any other night that I was normally experiencing. What happened was I was out at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't know, remember exactly the time. I had gone into a country music place. There were very few people in the bar. There was a band in the corner, and at the end of that bar sat a guy with a beard. And that beard offended me. I looked at that beard and I knew that there was going to be trouble. I had not even been introduced to that beard, but I knew there was going to be trouble. And I walked up to that fella and I said, I'm going to kill you. And he said, why? And I said, because of your beard. He looked puzzled. I had never been offended by a beard in my entire life. Beards never meant anything to me. They still don't. But somehow in that crazy self-destruct situation, I just wanted to have a problem. He got up in sections and we went outside. I remember what he said. He said, are you crazy? He said, something's wrong with you. And he was right. And I knew it and he knew it. So I pretended I had a gun, which I didn't have. He wasn't going to risk it. They called the police. Being an up-and-coming superstar lawyer, the police decided it was time for me to go home. You don't put up-and-coming superstar lawyers in jail. I went home that night, and then that morning I woke up and I knew that I was going to kill somebody or be killed because my conduct could not be guaranteed. It was almost as if I wanted to create a situation that would so incapacitate me that maybe I'd stop. I remember thinking often when I was in those tense situations, I almost wish that I was in an automobile accident so I could be in the hospital, just on the edge of death and recover, and maybe that would frighten me enough. Maybe I could quit then. Or maybe if I hurt somebody, just that would keep me from drinking. So that morning I called Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, good morning, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. Can I help you? I said, yes, I hope so. She talked for a few minutes and she asked me my name and number. And I thought that was an invasion of my privacy. What right did she have to ask me my name and number? This was an anonymous program. I don't know what the hell I expected. She was going to drop off a brown paper envelope on some street corner and I'd retrieve it or what, I don't know. But I didn't want to give her my name and number. I didn't want her. I thought I was the first lawyer that ever called Alcoholics Anonymous. She got it out of me. She said, listen, Frank. She said, at 6 o'clock tonight, we'll have somebody call you. Folks, this was 9 o'clock in the morning. I said, lady, this isn't going to work. I got to have help now. Because you see, by 6 o'clock in the night, tonight, I'm not going to need help. Because I've had remorse in the morning 1,000 times. And I know what happens. You get rid of remorse, you just take a few drinks in the afternoon. And by 6 o'clock, I'm too young to be an alcoholic. I'm just too smart to be an alcoholic. By 6 o'clock, I don't need you. I'm going to try again. All I've got to do is get my life in order. And I said, it's not going to work that way. She said, all right, I'll tell you what you're going to do. She said, if you're that serious about your recovery, there's a place in Chicago called the Mustard Seed. It's a club. And it's open all night and all day. And if you drive there, there'll be somebody there you can talk to. And I thought, that's exactly what I was going to do. So I got up out of my bed, and I showered and shaved, and I put on the most beautiful blue silk suit you ever saw. Matched my eyes. Those days we wore these gold pins in our, put one of those on, patent leather shoes, silk tie, gold watch, gold cufflinks, gold ring, and got my new Cadillac and went to join Alcoholics Anonymous. Now the reason I brought those things with me is because I was sure they would fool you. Because, see, when you saw those things, you'd know, too, that I wasn't really an alcoholic. And I had hid behind those things now for about 15 years, and they seemed to fool a lot of people. They made you think that I felt like somebody and that I was somebody, so I brought all those things. Now, I'm a suburban guy, and I lived at that time in a suburb, Palos Heights, and I wasn't familiar with this area of the city. But she had given me this address. So I start to drive into Chicago. Now, my mind is racing. The one thing that I seemed to be able to concentrate on and only concentrate on was, what are they going to look like? What are you going to look like? I thought you would have tambourines. I don't know. I don't know why, but it seemed to me that you would have tambourines. And I knew that you'd be losers, down-and-outers, and derelicts. I just knew that had to be. Now, as I'm driving towards this number that I have written down, the neighborhood is deteriorating. I am coming into a skid row. And I thought, oh, God, it's just like I thought it would be. Now, at that time, the Mustard Seed had a storefront building near Rush Street. Now we've moved several times. Now we're right near a strip joint. And as luck would have it, there was a parking spot right in front of the place. So I tooled that car right in front of that place because I wanted you to see that car. The only thing I was worried about is that you might steal my hubcaps if I stay too long. I went in that club and I spotted a young man who was about 25, 26, 27 years old. And I went to him because he had a white shirt and a tie on. I stayed in that club for 6.5 hours and I never stopped talking. I told that kid everything that I thought I remembered about me. I told him every seedy, every disgusting, every dirty, every weird, everything that I had to throw up. And I wanted to hear myself. Twice he spoke. Once he asked me if we could have some coffee. And then later, he asked if he could be excused to go to the washroom. I remember thinking he was in there too long. You know, after that 6.5 hours, that kid had the audacity to suggest that we go to an AA meeting. I thought to myself, how much recovery can one human being stand? I mean, you know, you don't want to get carried away with AA. I had my meeting. I was there for 6.5 hours. I told him things I never thought I'd tell anybody. And I felt better. Time to go home. I have to be home for dinner. I hadn't been home for dinner for 7 years. I got out of that place and got away from that kid. And I remember stopping for gas, and I called my wife on the telephone. I said, Lee, you won't believe this, but I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, we're having chicken. It'll be on the table at 6. I don't know about you folks, but I spent most of my drinking career, especially near the end, saying, I'm sorry. I'll try it. Things will get better. I'll quit. I'll watch it. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And you know, somewhere between 600 and 700 sorries, they don't care. They just can't care anymore. And she had been between 600 and 700 sorries, and she didn't care anymore. And I thought to myself, that's a hell of a way to treat a guy who's joined AA. But I thought, you know what? She's just doing that. But when I get home, she'll be at that door, and those 3 kids will be lined up, and when I walk in, I'm going to get a standing ovation. You know, I got to that door, and I went into that house, and there was no standing ovation. You know what there was? There was chicken on the table. It was 6 o'clock. 2 minutes later, the telephone rang, and every nerve end in my body reacted to that telephone. I don't know about you, but I'll tell you, in the latter stages of my drinking, when that phone rang, it sent chills through me, because I knew on the other end of that phone one day would be you, and you would tell me you knew, and you saw, and you heard, and you were going to tell them. So I answered that phone, but before I answered that phone, I knew exactly who would be there, because the lady had told me at 6 o'clock, Alcoholics Anonymous would call, and it was 6 o'clock. So I picked up that phone, and I heard the worst voice I've ever heard in my life. Frank. My name is George. I got your name from the central office. I understand you have a problem with alcohol. I said, hello, George. I said, I had a problem with alcohol. But I went to the mustard seed. He said, I'd like to come over and talk to you about it. Come over, I thought to myself. You know, I live in a nice suburb. Yeah, I got this house on top of this hill with a circular drive, and people could see who comes up to my house. I mean, can you imagine having an alcoholic come to visit in the middle of the night? Now, you know, I'll tell you something. I didn't want to be a lawyer. My father told me I had to be one to be somebody, and I ended up being a lawyer. But I was destined to be a lawyer. And I'll tell you why. I can lie with no thought process. Lies come to me like songs to a composer, like poems to a poet. I can just lie. And he asked to come over to my house, and I said, George, with no thought process whatsoever. Normally that'd be all right, but tonight I have to go to a PTA meeting. I have never been to a PTA meeting in my life. I had never met anyone who had ever gone to a PTA meeting. I wouldn't know what a PTA looked like. But at that moment, bang, I said, I can't go. I have to go to a PTA meeting. See, I had joined AA. I had mine. I mean, I had enough. He said, what time is that meeting over? I sensed we were going to have difficulties. I said, 8 o'clock. He said, I'll be there at 5 after 8. Huh. I said, George, normally that would be all right. But you see, after the regularly scheduled PTA meeting, we have a board of directors meeting. And I'm on the board of directors. He said, what time is that meeting over? I said, 10 o'clock. He said, I'll be there at 5 minutes after 10. I said, George, you're not going to believe this. But after the board of directors meeting, we have a finance committee meeting because we're raising some funds and I'm on the finance committee. Now, folks, God, you hear in Alcoholics Anonymous that God speaks through the membership. If that's true, God has got a dirty mouth. Because he went crazy. He started to scream and holler, and he started to use words. Now, look at this is a spiritual program, and I cannot tell you what he said. Now, you know I'm a good swearer. This guy was a pro. I can't tell you what he said, but I can tell you this. He had never met anybody in my family, but he seemed to know my mother. I mean, he just seemed to like to talk about her. Or maybe it was the word. I mean, a mother, I don't know, understand. And then my father got involved. I don't know how the hell he got in the picture. And he started to call me a liar and a phony. And he said to me, he says, listen, before I hang up on you because you disgust me, let me ask you a couple of questions, goof. I thought to myself, this is no way to make a 12-step call. He said, what are you, somebody important? I said, yep. He said, what are you, somebody famous? I said, yep. He said, what are you, a lawyer or something? I said, yep. He said, let me tell you something, famous, important lawyer. I'm a lawyer. I practiced law 18 years. 5 miles from where you live, and I've never heard of you. I said, what time could you come over? You know, before when I was talking to him and I was trying to figure out how to keep him out of my house and why I should keep him out of my house, one of the things I thought about was the fact my wife had new carpeting. I said, George, come on over. He said, I'm not coming. He said, I won't come. He said, you're not worth it. He said, I don't have time to waste with a phony, no good. And then there was another litany in my mouth. My mom and dad was talked about again. He said, if you want, you come to my house. I said, where do you live? He said, Beverly Hills. I thought to myself, at least I'm getting into the good branch. So I went to that big house in Beverly Hills and I knocked on the door and this little guy answered the door and he says, Frank! I said, yes, sir. I said, wait there. Went in the house, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 minutes. It seemed like one of those 3 or 4,000 year stints in purgatory. And he came out and he took me to my first meeting. 3 years later, he told me the reason he didn't let me in the house is because his wife had new carpeting. I never liked George. George often is at my talks. He's not here tonight, but he was here at Rockford. Took me to my first AA meeting, and that was November 3rd, 1971. And I didn't intend to stay there. I remember walking into that meeting, and I was ashamed to be there. I was ashamed to walk into that meeting. It was in a church basement. I was so glad it wasn't dark. And I was so glad we entered from an alley, because no one would see me. And I was so glad it was far away from my house, so that no one that I would know would be there. And then I was wondering what the hell you were going to look like. And I went down to that basement and I saw people that looked just like me. Iron workers, factory workers. There was a lawyer. There were several lawyers, as a matter of fact. And there was my college professor. I thought to myself, you belong here. I remember him. He was weird. And he looked up and he said, "Oh, hi, Frank. I was wondering how long it would take you to get here." I never liked him either. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous served me well for a while. And you know what? It was just so wonderful to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember getting home that night and I told my wife, it's unbelievable. They're just people. And they look so good and they smile and they laugh and they're clean. And they don't drink. And they used to drink a lot. And they don't drink anymore. And there's a guy there that hasn't had a drink for 7 months. You know, there was a guy there that didn't have a drink for 19 years. But the guy that didn't have a drink for 17 months is the only guy I remember. I thought to myself, it's possible. You can live without drinking. This guy did it for 17 months. 7 months. And I used to go to a lot of AA meetings, and I did early on what I see some newcomers do now. I learned the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned all of the steps. I learned all of the cliches, and I went to all of your meetings, and I told you all of the things I had learned. And I recited them just like we recite a poem. And it was just wonderful. And you all looked good to me. And my car was there, and my kids didn't seem to be as frightened. And I stayed sober. About 3 years sober, you started not to look so good. I got tired of the stories. I remember sitting at a meeting, and this lawyer would tell the same story every meeting, it seemed like, about walking down a highway. That was his bottom. I thought to myself, what kind of bottom is that, walking down a highway? I mean, you want to hear about a bottom, I'll tell you about a bottom. And I found out what a bottom was. And I believe this today. The bottom is not a place. Bottom is a feeling. Bottom need not be in a hospital, or it may be. It need not be in a divorce court, it may be. It need not be in a prison, or it may be. Bottom is a feeling. It's a feeling that I can't continue to live like this. I can't go on like this. And at the same time, how the hell do you live without it? How do you live in a drinking world without drinking? Everybody I know drinks. All my friends drink. If you're a man, you drink. Men drink. I walk into their houses. What's the first thing they ask me? "Hi, Frank, what would you like to drink?" What am I going to say to them? What are they going to think? And you know, after 3 years sober, I was ready to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know where the hell I was going to go, but I knew I didn't belong there. The people just started to look bad. The story started to get boring. I was tired of telling them how much I knew. I met a man, by the grace of God, and you know that's another thing I just mentioned, and I won't go on much longer. You know, sometimes you hear an Alcoholics Anonymous alcoholic look at that derelict or that troubled alcoholic or drunk and say, "There, but go, for the grace of God, go I." You know, I'll tell you, I think that's a contradiction. I believe that God gives everybody the same grace. Some of us, through pain, finally accept it and act upon it. I don't think God picks me out and condemns him. I don't think I'm supposed to be sober in Alcoholics Anonymous and you're not. I don't think God could be that way. I don't think a loving God, which I now have found in Alcoholics Anonymous, picks and chooses people to destroy, some people to help. I mean, I just can't believe that, no matter how I try. But by the grace of God, I met a man in Alcoholics Anonymous when I was ready to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told him how bad I felt. I told him that now, after being sober 3 years, I still have the same emotions that I came in with. I'm still bothered by the same thoughts, the same guilt, the same feelings. It's just now I've learned to hide those things. And when you're sober 3 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't want to tell people that you still feel that way. You got to act recovered. That's for newcomers to do. They're supposed to talk about being weird and dirty, strange, insecure, envious, frightened. But when you're 3 years sober, baby, I got mine, newcomer, and you'll get yours. Just keep on coming. I said to this guy, I don't feel like I belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not that I'm better than, it's just that it's just nothing's happening. He said, "That's understandable, goof." He said, "You've never been in Alcoholics Anonymous. You've just gone to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings." I thought to myself, I went to 1,000 meetings. I recently heard a guy talk about that. He said that you do not treat your alcoholism by going to meetings. It's like taking a chair and putting it in a chicken coop. Sit there for 15 weeks and see if you become a chicken. Meetings, this man said, create a sterile environment for goofs like you, which may be conducive to action. And the action, young man, he said, are the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when you begin to use those steps, you will be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought to myself, what does he know? He was only sober 34 years at the time. So I'm 3 years sober, and he tells me that it's time for me to take the first step. And I said, you're right. But first I wanted to argue with him. And he said to me, I don't want to argue, because this is not a debating society. You want to go argue, you find some goof like you to argue with. He said, how do you feel 3 years sober? And I said, terrible. He said, that's the end of the argument. Under his guidance and the guidance of some other people, I was forced, based on pain, to take the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. To take them in the order in which they were written. Because it was pointed out to me that there's a purpose in that order. And I was told, and I believe today, and I'd just like to share this with you, that I was told that I hadn't wasted those 3 years, that I was sober, and I may have avoided a great deal of difficulty, but that it was time to recover, and it was time for me to identify the enemy. And he said to me, and it was reinforced by other people who seemed to have greater insights than I, he said, you know, Frank, you have been in Alcoholics Anonymous believing that the enemy was alcohol, when the enemy never was alcohol. He said, alcohol is a symptom of your problem. The enemy is you. And the war is between you and you. And the name of the game, young man, is not do not drink alcohol. The name of the game is change. And if you don't change, you're going to go. He says, because you're going to go. And I've never heard anything better than that. The name of the game is change. And how you effectuate this change, he told me, was as a result of these actions. And I'm here to tell you that it works. It works for a guy like me who can lie with no thought process. It worked for a guy like me who was so cute and slick and smart, so bright, too smart for Alcoholics Anonymous. I tell you what, I'm sober now 11 plus years, and I've never met anybody too dumb to make it in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I've met thousands like me who are too smart. Maybe if I'm too smart, I don't make it here. Maybe if I got all the answers, I don't make it here. And that was my problem. So I came into Alcoholics Anonymous for the wrong reasons and stayed to get the right results. And I've gotten things I never expected to get from you. I've got understandings and a way of life. I just didn't know that this was what was going to happen. I thought I was just going to stop drinking alcohol. It was just going to be okay. It's a way of life. Everything good that's happened to me has happened to me since I've joined Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing has happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous that has required that I escape to alcohol. I don't have to run and hide anymore. I don't have to use alcohol to make me feel good, because that's all I ever wanted, and that's all I've ever met anybody who's in this program has ever wanted. What we want is just to feel good about ourselves, to fit in, to be able to live in your world. And I didn't know how to do that. Now Alcoholics Anonymous does for me exactly what alcohol used to do for me and then quit doing. When I'm afraid, I take in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not afraid. I've never been a coward in Alcoholics Anonymous. I just seem to have enough courage. I don't have to fight to prove it. No fight in me. Alcohol does for me what alcohol used to do in every area of my being, and it does it on a continuing basis. And it does that, I'm sure, for you. In closing, I'm just tell you a little story that this wise man told me. Maybe it's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. He said, one of us died. Went up to see St. Peter. St. Peter says, I have two rooms to show you. He took him into the first room, and the room was like this: banquet tables laden with every delicacy in the world, every imaginable food and beverage. Beautiful. And in that room were people, and those people had overextended arms, too long for their bodies. And they couldn't bend those arms, nor could they bend their necks. And in the midst of all that food and all that drink, they were starving to death. Because you see, folks, they couldn't get the food to their mouth. And he says, this is hell. So he took him to the next room, and it was exactly the same kind of room, with exactly the same kind of food, and exactly the same kind of people whose arms were too long and they couldn't bend. And he said to him, do you know what that is? He said, yes. He said, that room is Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you see, in that room, everybody was well fed, and everybody was healthy, and everybody was shiny. They were eating. The difference was, they were feeding each other. Thank you very much.